In his latest novel, Before We Sleep, Jeffrey Lent explores family secrets and the love that holds families together. It is also about the greatest generation as it moves into the very different era of the 1960s, and about the trauma of war that so profoundly weighed on both generations. Jeffrey Lent was born in Vermont and grew up there and in western New York State. His first novel, In the Fall, was a national bestseller. His other novels are Lost Nation, A Peculiar Grace, After You've Gone, and A Slant of Light. Again, the name of the new novel is Before We Sleep, and it's a pleasure to welcome Jeffrey Lent to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. It's delightful to be here.
What brought you to this particular story of looking at this generation, but also wanting to look at these characters?
My dad was just a little too young to serve in World War II, but I grew up, of course, with friends whose parents had served, particularly their fathers. So it was very much, in my younger childhood, a strong part of life, including the stories about the men who had come home and were kind of damaged, which that was more of a neighborhood discussion than a national discussion, if you know what I mean. You know, we all knew the guy that he had warned his children and his children's friends, don't ever walk up behind me without whistling or saying something. That sort of thing. And of course, there were darker stories too. But so I really wanted to write about that time period. And also, Vermont was very, very much, World War II was a turning point for Vermont, as it was for other parts of deeply rural America. Vermont was essentially, in many ways, still in the 19th century until World War II. That was interesting for me to kind of explore that. And then the second part of the anecdote here for the genesis of this book was, this is the second book in a two-book contract with Bloomsbury, the first of which was A Slant of Light. But when I wrote that contract, that was five years ago. And I have two daughters who are now 16 and 18. 5 years ago, they were 5 years younger. And my oldest daughter, I overheard talking with her mother and was saying, I'd really like to read a novel that has two strong female protagonists. And I thought, well, I can do that. And of course, the interesting thing about that, personally about that was that in the process, if I wrote, of course, A Slant of Light first, and then by the time I got around to writing this, both of my girls were advanced into their teenage years and were going through the typical teenage girl stuff with their mother and with their father and, all of that. So I had it all around me all of a sudden as I was writing this. That was a very interesting art collides with life situation.
So in the novel, we meet Katie Snow, 17 years old, and she ultimately gets in her dad's truck and puts the truck in neutral, goes out the driveway, and is looking for information about her father, who she loves very, very much. So talk a little bit about the beginning of the novel and the setup and this of what Katie is ultimately looking for.
Katie is seeking a man who had served in the war with her father and had come in the summer of 1950 to visit him and her mother. And she'd known nothing about, except she'd found a cache of Christmas cards that had arrived for a few years in the early 50s, and then they trickled off, disappeared. And as happens, later in the book, we learn that during a dinner table argument between mother and daughter, her father stood up and basically she said something about, was I adopted? And he basically stood up and said something, like, you might as well have been left the house. So created this sense of mystery, and she got this notion that this other man might indeed be her biological father. So in June of 1967, she starts off with the one address, which is in Eastern Maine, that she has for him to see if she can run him to ground.
Jeffrey Lent's new novel is Before We Sleep. It is published by Bloomsbury. The book goes back and forth, and of course there's Katie's perspective on the road, but there is also her mother's recollections of her courtship with Oliver.
I really felt like it was the best way to set up the contrast between those two generations, to alternate their stories. Katie's, of course, is all in the present tense, with the exception of some memories. But with Ruth, we get the ability to actually just travel back into their, well, she and Oliver first meet when they're 7 years old. Small town, small Vermont town life. And they're very much drawn to each other. His family had partial French-Canadian descent, but they had arrived a few generations before and bought a limping along general store, which they turned into a, over a couple of generations, a true, what we would call here, a going business. So they become, fairly prosperous merchants, and Ruth's family, it's a little more old New England. Her grandfather was a state legislator, and her father was an educational superintendent. So there was a little tension between the two families, but not too great.
With that contrast, as you're reading the novel, you always get the sense that we're very close to a point where what this family knows about itself and what we know about this family is going to change fairly drastically.
Yes, and I think another factor is that I very intentionally chose June of 1967 as opposed to a year earlier or a year later, because things were heating up in the country at that point. But for a 17-year-old girl from a very rural part of Vermont, she was aware of these things, but only through television news and magazines. And in fact, the greatest medium that she had a sense of the growing changes that were occurring for her generation, of course, were radio with music, the music that was coming through the airwaves. Literally a sense of change coming through the air for her. The 1960s are layered in just a mountain of cliches now for us. And so to try to capture the sense of innocence and slow comprehension of those changes for someone as they were occurring rather than in hindsight was a great challenge. And I had a lot of fun with this young woman trying to pace her and place her correctly in that time frame. To what degree I succeeded, that's for other people to decide.
Let us talk a little bit, you touched on it at the beginning of our conversation, but about this idea of setting it in Vermont and New England, and it does take place in other places as well, but how do you feel that that is emblematic of much of the time period, especially in the war years, or that it is wonderfully unique to write about?
You know, I think it's kind of, the answer is kind of both. Because, so much of America was at a distance from these critical events that were occurring. But we also had, it's nothing like today, but we had the evening news that everybody watched, and daily newspapers, and even in small towns there were daily newspapers. And people read them, and people watched the news. People listened to the news on the radio still. I think by 1967, there was definitely a growing awareness that, first of all, the war in Vietnam was very, very different than the World War II or even the Korean War. And there was also an alarm in the country that this younger generation seemed to be rejecting the easy answers that it had seemed to be for their parents' generation in World War II. World War II was once Pearl Harbor hit, if you were able to, you went to war one way or another. You either worked in war industries or you were in the armed forces. So, you know, to have these all of a sudden your children saying, wait a minute, what's going on? This isn't, you know, there are things wrong here. I think that was a time of great confusion and soul searching. Not so much in the young generation, because they kind of felt like they were leading the way, but for that generation of vets. And I can, you know, again, I can address that directly from my own experience. Listening to my parents as the 60s rolled along, talking about my brother is 4 years older than I am, so he was getting very close to the draft and the lottery, and listening to them talk about how they felt about this. I was 12 years old when the shootings went down at Kent State. So my reaction was, I was 12 years old. I was thinking college, you know, in 4 years. I mean, I was not a kid that felt like this was something happening somewhere else. I was just amazed and horrified by it. And again, I was out in rural America, but there it was. The music was coming through the air. Crosby, Stills, and Nash's song, Ohio. And it came out, what, 2 weeks after the shooting? Yeah. It was all there. It felt very palpable, very real all around us. In some sense, I think that, you know, we've lost the idea of the innocence that was marred by the horror of that war. And we simply look back on it as, you know, the counterculture and the failures that came out of the counterculture, the disruptions of society and all of that stuff, which personally I think it's largely a lot of hooey, but simply because, you know, Reagan said it doesn't mean it was so. But I wanted to write about that for quite some time. As I said, I grew up in rural America. I also had the wonderful opportunities of attending an alternative high school. My first college was an alternative college, which was actually Franconia College, which I wrote about a little bit in this book. And I did not portray it in the book in a terribly favorable light, because that was also reality, was that, you know, the whole peace, love, and understanding generation had huge problems within it as well. Trying to write about actual people and what actually happened to them, as opposed to ideals of what could have been or should have been, is one of the jobs, I think, of a novelist.
Jeffrey Lent's new novel is Before We Sleep. It is published by Bloomsbury. You studied literature and psychology. As far as being a published author, that came much later. At what point did it start to click for you, and did you know that, okay, I'm doing the right thing?
I was at Franconia from 1975 until 1978, January 1978, when it very abruptly closed. And then, unlike a lot of my friends, I took a couple of years off and traveled around and worked and thought. And I'd always been writing. The study of psychology was simply as the study of how people work, what, you know, why they do what they do and what they get up to. Working for a couple of years enforced the notion that was already pretty strong in me, that writing was what I wanted. And so when I returned to school at the SUNY College at Purchase, I studied only literature, and I had a creative writing tutorial during which I wrote the first major section of my first attempt at a novel. And, you know, again, it's part of my personality, my makeup, but at Purchase, I looked very closely at my advisor, who was a brilliant young poet, who was married, had two young children, was working hard to get tenure, and writing less poetry than he wished he was doing. And my writing tutorial teacher, who is a wonderful Joycean scholar who was an alcoholic and mostly lived in his office. He had a mattress that he propped up against the wall. So I looked at these two guys and I thought, I don't want to end up this way. And I also had the supreme self-confidence of a 21-year-old that I would probably be in print and famous by the time I was 25 or 26. So I left and sort of put myself in that position of not being able to pursue an academic career. It took me about 15 years longer than I had thought it would. Four failed novels, and then one that I finally got my agent with and almost got published. And then was during the process, that whole process, I got married to a wonderful woman who was very, very supportive of what I was doing. And we kept going, and I'd been writing kind of short novels because I thought that's what the marketplace was really looking for. And after the first accepted novel did not sell, I turned to her and I said, okay, I'm going to write the big book I've been holding back. And I did. And it took me a year and a half, and we sold it in 4 days. So, you know, that's all of that meaning just that, you know, it took me longer to learn how to write in the way that I really wanted to write. And I'm grateful for that in a sense. I think if success comes too soon for many writers, they tend to get caught in a cycle of trying to repeat that early success. And one of the grand things for me is, you know, a novel is about 2 years from start to finish. During that time, you know, once you start a novel, you're kind of locked into a mindset, into a place, into the ideas of the characters, the frames of reference for the characters. But you're also living and paying attention to what's going on around you, hopefully, and learning more stuff about more things about the way people work. So about halfway through the process of writing a novel, I start to project ahead to the next book because there's stuff that I want to get into there that I can't put in the book that I'm working on. And that's kind of a short version of how I go about working.
Well, the name of the new novel is Before We Sleep. It is published by Bloomsbury. Jeffrey Lend, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us.
It's been wonderful. Thank you.
Once again, Jeffrey Lend's new novel is Before We Sleep. It is published by Bloomsbury. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.